us this morning. Oh, we'll wait for that to finish. If you're visiting with us this morning, you are kind of jumping into what has been a 17-week series to date. Admittedly so, we are entering into the most difficult section of the story. So if you're here today and you're like, wow, this guy seems really angry, I'm just kind of following the storyline, but it does end in a great space of hope and joy, which we will see kind of at the culmination of our time together this morning. But just to get started this morning, I'm not sure if you have been paying any attention to kind of what's going on in our country as of late, but if you have, you'll know that our government has kind of got themselves into a bit of a controversy around the Canada Summer Jobs Program. Our government is saying to a variety of organizations that you will not receive funding from us, the government, unless you are willing to attest to certain things that they want to add into the charter as though it carries the same weight as the charter. There's all kinds of problems connected with this, but one of the key issues is that what they are asking organizations to attest to go far beyond what our kind of enshrined documents of who we are as a people have already kind of declared. And to add it in becomes problematic, particularly for people of faith, because what they're asking is for us to agree to a framework of life that would be in direct contradiction to who Jesus is and his words around life and living. I share this with you this morning, not because I am a pastor that kind of rages against the political machine, because I think that's foolish, largely because I don't ever see Jesus do it in his ministry. You never see Jesus with a sign or with his guys hanging out outside kind of Caesar's temple, throwing eggs, kind of calling names. Like, you just don't see it. And because I don't see that or ever hear him instruct us in that way, I won't be in that same space. I share this story with you to share something with most of you, I think, kind of already know. We live in a culture, particularly from a Christ follower's perspective, we live in a culture that is becoming more and more secular, more and more hostile towards God and his design for life and living. Now, some of you, you're like, yes, finally he's going to kind of go down this road. No, just relax. You will be utterly disappointed by the time we're through. We have witnessed this hostility now for some time. I was never old enough to remember this, but some of you certainly are, that you remember when the Lord's Prayer was taken out of the public school system that was recited before they began. Some of you are like, yeah, I remember those days. As far as I understand it, today, teachers are specifically instructed to not promote their faith at all in the classroom with the students that they've been called to teach and instruct. When students enter into university, they see this hostility often in the classroom. Professors and students speak of Christian faith at times as though it's the worst thing that has ever happened to the world. It is viewed as being old, stale, irrelevant, or at worst, judgmental, discriminatory, and restrictive. A young person who holds on to the idea that being sexually pure until being married, or being careful to the kind of music we listen to, or being wise to the movies that we watch, or that we will not engage in viewing of pornography for what it does to the mind and heart, or that God is the one that determines gender, not someone's decision, or that praying is important, that reading the scriptures are important to how one is to live their life. Any young person that holds to any one of these things, let alone all of them, they are in for hostility in their life. And at times will experience being ostracized from family and friends. We live in a world that is at an alarming rate moving away from the one true God and his design for life and living. Now, before you think this is unique to us, you need to understand that it's not. There have been others who have gone before us that have experienced the same kind of things that I've just described. And we're going to get into that in a moment, because chapter 17 of the story, kind of where we are right now in the nation of Israel's life, this is very similar to what's unfolding in Judah, in Israel. And we are introduced to a group of individuals called messengers or called prophets that we got into a few weeks ago. But we are going to look at a couple of them this morning, because we would be wise to pay attention to the prophets and how they lived for three reasons. We're going to put them up on the screen so that hopefully you can kind of feel the weight of this as a Christ follower, as we are in a time of life that's very similar to what they experienced 2,800 years ago, as the nation of Israel was kind of working through a variety of things connected to their own sin and their drifting away from who God is and what He called His people to be. Through the prophets that we will highlight this morning, we will gain insight how we are to live our lives right now. 2,700 years ago is more relevant to you than you could possibly fathom as it relates to being faithful to what Jesus has called us to be and do. We will gain insight through these prophets how we are to live in the coming days. And regardless of how bad things get, through these prophets, hope always, always remains. So this kind of culture that I just described that's going on in our Canadian world right now, it is not too dissimilar to what was going on in Israel and Judah back 2,700 years ago. Over the past two or three chapters of this story, we have been looking at both the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom, and how both of these kingdoms, God's people, were walking in opposition to what God had called them to be and do and how to live their lives. They worshipped and promoted all kinds of different gods and different practices that were a violation, that were an offense to God. Just to give you a glimpse of what I'm referring to, Manasseh, one of the kings of the southern kingdom, thought it would be a good idea to come into the temple where they were called to worship God and build an altar there in this temple to another god, brings his son into the temple where they're to worship the one true God, and there he kills his son as a sacrifice to the other god. Like, these are bizarre practices that are in violation of all kinds of things. And this frustrates and brings up an anger in God that we've been tracking now for what is about 700 years. This is not kind of God on an afternoon getting mad for no reason. This is 700 years of this slow descend into a space of His people just absolutely tanking on what they are called to be and do as a people. And it's in this context that God sends two more messengers, two more prophets. Their names are Jeremiah and Ezekiel. Both of them are to warn the people of Judah, the southern kingdom. And their warning invites a hostility towards them that is breathtaking. And I can understand why, because I want to read to you the warning. Here it is. This is Ezekiel. Disaster! Unheard of disaster! See, it comes. Doom has come upon you. Upon you and all who dwell in the land. The time has come. The day is near. There is panic, not joy, in the mountains. I'm about to pour out my wrath on you and spend my anger against you. I will judge you according to your conduct and repay you for all your detestable practices. I can understand why that's not on the Hallmark card and why that invites kind of claps of joy. Like, yay, Ezekiel. Like, I can see why this invites hostility. Jeremiah says the same thing. All Judah will be carried into exile, carried away completely. This message that they bring from God invites hostility in their life. In the face of this hostility, God tells them that He will be with them. Don't worry, I'm present. I will minister to you. I will do what I'm about to do, and you can remain kind of close to me, in me. I will walk through this season of your life regardless of the hostility that's coming. To us now, 2,700 years ago from this moment, as followers of Jesus, we, like the prophets, we are called of God to a task of delivering a message. Jesus outlines, and this is crucial for you to hear, Jesus outlines what that message is in Matthew 28 or in Acts 1:8. Go into all the world, tell them about who I am, teach them all that I've taught you, baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. This is the task that has been given to us as messengers by God for this time and place. And I want to be clear with some of you, because some of you, you kind of create your own message. And it's not at all the message that Jesus has told His followers to declare. You actually think it's the same message as Ezekiel and Jeremiah. And it gets crazy sometimes in social media and books that are written. Blood moons and Russia and war and death and all of these things. That's not the message that we've been declared to tell the nations. Jesus has clearly defined what this message is. And it is that Jesus is, in fact, the Son of God. and that he offers life and rest to anyone who responds to him, and that salvation is given freely to the ones who by faith recognize and walk with him. And you would think that this message that we declare is a good thing in a world that is in fact looking for rest and wholeness and life and restoration and forgiveness. You would think that it would kind of adorn people to like, wow, I like this. I like this message. But listen, the message that Jesus invites us to declare actually invites hostility towards his followers. And I want to explain the two ways in which it invites hostility towards us that follow Jesus Christ and declare his message. Number one, we live in a culture where there is just absolutely no such thing as absolute truth. We live in a world where for someone to declare this is right and this is wrong, that man, that woman gets beat up on social media like unbelievable. And here's what I need you to understand, Christ follower, this morning. If you don't know the Lord, I get it. But for you, the Christ follower, everything that Jesus says is right. Which means everything that someone else says is wrong. And you're like, well, that sounds kind of arrogant. We believe he's the Son of God. So when he has something to say on a matter, it's right. It's not up for grabs. This is the charge that's laid against Christians, for those who love the Lord. We're narrow-minded, we're discriminatory, we're restrictive, we're all these things in its worst expressions. When we declare who Jesus is, he is the Son of God. He lived and died and was raised from the grave. He is all these things, which mean, therefore, he is right on all matters of life and living. That invites there's no such thing as absolute truth. It invites people to be mad at the declaration of who Jesus is in the world in which we live. And some of you, as I say the words of he's right in all things, you're like, well, I don't know about that. Okay. Then you do not believe that he is the Son of God. Period. If there's things that he has said into the world, and you're like, you're like 98% right, but these two, that's difficult. Well, then you just continue to struggle with the identity of who this man was that lived in the first century. He is the Son of God, or he's not. And if he is, all that he said is right and true. And by declaring who he is, it invites hostility because people are like, there's no such thing as absolute truth. This is the first area that invites hostility to the prophets, the people who declare God's message now in the world. The second one is this. We love to be our own boss. We love to rule our own life. We love to be our own king. We love to be our own queen. And there isn't anyone in this world that's going to tell me how to live. Particularly some guy with sandals from 2,000 years ago. Like I am not buying into that foolishness. He was old. He is irrelevant. It was a different time. He had camels. We have cars. Like, it was just a different time. We love to be our own boss. And what's fascinating about Jesus and his claims as it relates to him being Lord, it means that if we refuse to allow him to be boss, we will rob ourselves from what he actually is trying to do in us. Bring life, restore, bring forgiveness, make people that are broken whole again. We rob ourselves from what he is trying to do in us, which oddly enough is what we're trying to do for ourselves that we can't do. We love to be our own king. We love to be our own queen. And when we declare Jesus as king, that invites a hostility in a world where we just refuse to listen to anyone speak any words of direction into our life. Because we're smart, we're educated, and oddly enough, the resume of our lives would seem to declare something different. Like the prophets in the Old Testament, we should expect a certain level of hostility as we go about the task that Jesus has given to his followers, as we declare who he is to a lost and broken world. And while we do this work, like the prophets in the Old Testament, we ought to be deeply comforted and confident in this God who is still present with us while we do this work in carrying out his message. It is Jesus who said, I'm going to be with you until the very end. It is Jesus who sends his Spirit in Acts 2 to minister in the hearts of the ones who choose to follow him to do the very work that he's called us to do. Which means while we do the work, while we declare this message, while we follow through with the task that we've been given, God himself is present to us like he was with the prophets who declared a very harsh news and message to the people of Judah 2,700 years ago. The second thing is we gain through these prophets insight on how we are to live in the coming days. What the prophets said about Judah actually do come to pass. And this is all history. Like, if you want to explore the historical realities of these things, easily just go search what happened to Judah in 568 BC, and you'll see the story, the historical reality of the Babylonians who came in and absolutely laid waste over the nation of Israel. Destroyed the temple, ruined and destroyed all of it, and carried the whole nation off into exile. Their words of what was to come came true. And Jeremiah, in the midst of this, is deeply bothered by this. He is saddened by this. His heart grieves for his people. Because of your sin, because of your arrogance, because of his heart is broken over what happens to his own people. Some of you Christ followers, you have a very distorted view of when death reigns in the world, you're like, serves you right. Where do we get that from? Because it's not in the scriptures. The prophets' hearts break over what they witness happening to their people. We would do well to understand that as people we know, people we love, when they decide in their heart of hearts to do their own thing and walk directly against the true God who has designed life for living in particular ways, that your heart should break for them, because when they go this way, heartache and suffering is going to follow. It's going to follow. I can't imagine as a dad watching my kid walk off. Serves you right. What? My heart breaks for family members who have chosen to live outside of God's ways. Because I am a witness to the heartache and suffering that they've invited into their life. And as we watch our nation go, and nations around the world go this way, our hearts should break for what we see. And we're watching it on a daily basis. Over the past few decades, we are a witness to the family unit continually being deteriorating and redefined, and it is going to have far outworking kind of tentacles that go way out in ways that we'll never fully understand. The increase in mental illness in our world as we continually just celebrate things that are completely outside of God's design. The rise of unwanted sexual advances and abuse. And listen, given the frequency, the accessibility, and all of the playground that is now on your computers around pornography, it is, what do you expect from men or women who inundate themselves with graphic, pornographic situations and scenarios, and then they go to the office place? Well, I watched this. This must be true. And it gets played out in hundreds of different ways and scenarios now. And it breaks my heart as I watch these unfold. In our own country, the widespread availability of and use of drugs and the severity of these things just continue to increase, and it invites heartache and suffering. What transpires in the nation of Israel should help you anticipate what's coming for Canada. And it should break your heart. I suspect you're not too dissimilar from me, where you have family and friends that are choosing to live outside of God's design. And I know that it invites a heartache that they don't need to necessarily walk through and experience in this world. And it's right here in this moment where I remember that God has always, always used this type of suffering to actually bring people back to Him, where they respond to who He is. We have been a witness of this over and over and over again through this story, particularly through the season of the Judges. God often purposefully brings or passively allows suffering to come on those that decide to walk away and live their own lives, so that they might turn back to Him and live. And this has great implications for us, the church. The task that we have been given to deliver the message of Jesus to the world, we are headed to a moment in history that we cannot miss. We are headed to a moment in time where people are going to need to hear this message unlike ever before. And in that moment, like what we have seen in the story so far, they're no longer going to be hostile to it because they want to get out of the hell that they've created for themselves in this life. And they want to be made whole again. They want to experience life. They want to walk kind of chin up, eyes full, full of life, full of all the shame gone, all the brokenness restored. They will want to get back into this space. This leads us into the third thing that we can learn. And this is, I love this part. Regardless of how dark the world gets, how dark culture gets, hope always remains on the horizon. God, after He lets His people go, after using the Babylonians to come in and destroy, God quickly says to Jeremiah, to the people, Israel, I will save you out of this distant place. God says to Ezekiel, I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back into your land. I will give you a new heart and I will put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. Even as Israel marches off into captivity and exile, there's this language of hope that's over them. And we see it come to fruition in 538, where Israel returns to the land. They begin to rebuild the temple. And we'll talk about who is in place and the event that happens that brings this about in just a couple Sundays. These are the words of hope that were given by God through His prophets, and they are still words of hope now in this time that we live. Because they are still words of redemption and restoration. Because whether you believe this or not, God is still in the business of giving people new hearts, new spirits, taking things that are dead and bringing them back to life in every way that that term can be interpreted. After we walk away and experience exile, God is at work trying to bring us back, and He does. This morning, I want you to meet a friend of mine. His name's Donnie. He's sitting right back over here. Donnie's life, in many ways, is just like the people of Israel. He grew up in a space where he knew of God, he knew of His ways, he knew of all kinds of things that were honoring to the Lord. And God answered a variety of prayers and gifted him with an incredible gift of basketball. Comes to PEI, gets playing here in Holland College, and gets involved in all kinds of things. And in many ways, it's like the nation of Israel, where God tells them, when you move into the land, you're going to forget me. You're going to get nice homes, and your money's going to increase, and you're going to land, all this stuff, and you're going to walk away thinking that this was you, not me. And that's very much part of Donnie's story. Donnie moved out west, and in a variety of ways, like Israel, was gone. I'd love you to watch the screen.